Today up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, there is a meeting taking place of a number of various Sabbath-keeping organizations or representatives of various organizations. And in fact, two of our ministers, if not more, are present at this particular gathering. I don't know the official title of it, but Tulsa was chosen, and various people are there. If I were to name some of them, you'd recognize them right away, like Mr. Wayne Cole is going to be there. I'm sure representatives from the various alphabet soup of Sabbath-keeping groups will be there. Mr. Ben Chapman and James Throgmorton, both are there to kind of see how the wind is blowing among Sabbath-keeping groups. And I find it interesting because one of the reoccurring questions that is often asked is, why can't we just get together? To paraphrase the great philosopher of Los Angeles, Rodney King, why can't we just get along? You know, that's a question that people have. And it's a fair question because the Bible continually talks of being in unity one with another if you are in the faith. And yet, the evidence around us, not only in the Sabbath-keeping tradition, especially in the state of Texas, there is great divide among Southern Baptists, for instance. It's an amazing thing to have people claim allegiance to one concept or one God and one way, and yet there's such division. And how does that happen, and how do you surmount it? Sometimes it's easy to bury one's head in the sand and not consider it at all. In other words, to embrace the congregation in which you're in and think that that's all there is. You know, and everybody else is on the outside looking in. It's sort of like being in the ark, you know, and you're not concerned about anything else. But the Bible speaks in many ways against that sort of circumstance, because it has played into the hand of the arch enemy. And that enemy, of course, is Satan the devil. I used to hear, and perhaps some of you have been around a while, have heard of two ways of life. The way of give, the way of get. Or the way of good and the way of evil. There's no middle ground, though many people like to straddle the fence and try to be in the middle ground area. Really, there are only two ways of life. And when we examine these two ways of life, we can call one God's way, or we can call one the devil's way. And I have considered that while the devil, or the evidence of the devil, is all around us, in entertainment, in politics, his most gorgeous work, if I may use the term gorgeous, the most attractive work, the most spectacular work he has done, is in churches. That's where he works the hardest, because he doesn't have to worry about the mainstream of the world, the rest of the world, where great demonism exists and great darkness rests over the nations. Don't have to worry about those places. And it seems that he is very, very busy in his actions within what we call the church. Notice 2 Corinthians, where Paul writes again to the Corinthian church in chapter 2. And he makes this observation. And he makes it because Paul knew of the contrast between ways of life. He had confronted it at Ephesus, for instance, and we're going to read a little bit of that in a moment. Apollos had experienced it as well, and we will read those verses in Acts the 18th and 19th chapter in a moment, but I want to establish that Satan, or the devil, has a way. In verse 11 of 2 Corinthians 2, it says, "Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices." That is, we're supposed to have knowledge about the way he works. That's always so curious to me, that people who claim to be Christians play right into his hands so often, because they are ignorant of his devices, of how he works, what his way is. And they travel right along that path as if they have a hook in their nose or in their jaw, and never consider that what they are doing or the attitude that they portray is satanic or of the devil. It certainly should not be viewed as God's way versus Satan's way. So, let's examine today what we can learn. And this is not going to be comprehensive because of time limitations. You could talk a lot about the devil and what he's done through history from Genesis the third chapter forward. He's been busy. He's been quite active. You could read, for instance, the word devil does not appear in the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible. It never appears there, but Satan's name does appear, or Satan, the term Satan, appears there, especially in 1 Chronicles, the 21st chapter, where when some people think, well, you know, I'm impervious, I'm bulletproof, I can't be touched by a devil in any way. Well, 1 Chronicles 21 says that David was influenced by Satan to do something against God's will. And if David can be influenced, who can't? Who can't be touched by the devil's way? On that particular occasion, just to remind you, God had told David through Nathan not to number Israel, that is, not to take a census to see how many soldiers he had so he could go to war. David kind of liked that. You know, you kill a lion, you kill a bear, and you certainly wipe out Goliath. You kind of like to flex your muscle every now and then to show people, yeah, I'm David, I'm bad. Saul has killed his thousand, David has killed his 10,000, I'm down with it. And God says, no, don't do that. And Satan influenced him to number Israel. Seems like a little minor thing. But the same transference over to the church and its activities can reveal the presence of Satan influencing people to do things. I remember when we used to give the number, well, you know, there are over 400 denominations, different denominations in the U.S. alone. Well, that number is so far outstretched now. I mean, do we even have a number? Because there are individual little websites now where church organizations or people proclaiming to have some aspect of truth propel or present their information, and they are considered, or they consider themselves, as distinct from some other group. We don't even know the number. Even among Sabbath-keeping people, we don't have a clue as to how many there are. And you have to ask yourself, what's motivating it? Why is it so? So when we take a look here at a particular passage I want to look at, let's look at Acts, the 18th chapter. To contrast Satan's way against God's way for a moment. In Acts 18, we are introduced to a man named Apollos. In verse 24. And I'll never forget the presentation in First Year Bible. That was what we called the life of Christ and the apostles when I was in college so many years ago, I've forgotten. And I'm sure Charles will remember this experience. Of course, I had Dr. Rod Meredith as my teacher. I don't know who you had, Charles, but sitting there in First Year Bible, and when we got to the book of Acts, the point was very well made in this stretch of chapter 18 and 19 of how Garnet Ted Armstrong came to a realization that the way of God was something real because of something he had read in a Reader's Digest that proclaimed that Christianity was not a way of life. He told that story many times. And he was confronted by some verses here in chapter 18 and 19 about a way of life. And this was repeated, of course, every year in first year Bible to all of the students assembled there, so all of us could tell the same story at some point in time. But notice in chapter 18 and verse 24, "And a certain Jew named Apollos, born at Alexandria." This is important. Alexandria was a place of learning. It was a city developed by, Alexander the Great in Upper Egypt. I get my bearings right because of the way the Nile flows. Maybe it was Lower Egypt. The Nile River flows down into the interior of, am I right about that, Benny? It flows down towards the center of Africa. And therefore, Upper Egypt would be down at the bottom. So Lower Egypt would be up where Alexandria is as it enters out into the waterway goes to the Mediterranean. And Alexandria was a city where all of the libraries were. I mean, where all the learning was. And Apollos was an individual who was very astute. It describes him this way, that he was an eloquent man and mighty in the scriptures. He came to Ephesus. This man was instructed in the way of the Lord. Now, as Christians, we have been exposed to that way. As we study the Bible, we see that God has things in a certain order. He wants things done in a certain way. And of course, we know the Ten Commandments are probably the template of how he wants things to done. And as you examine the Old Testament, the Proverbs, and the entirety of the Bible, that way of life is revealed. So Apollos was knowledgeable and was a man instructed in the way of the Lord. In verse 26, he began to speak boldly in the synagogue, whom when Aquila and Priscilla had heard, they took him unto them and expounded unto him the way of God more perfectly. So we have the way of the Lord, the way of God. More perfectly means more precisely is what they did. They taught him more precisely what he needed to know. So that way is a contrasting way to another kind of living. It goes on in chapter 19. Again at Ephesus, and I mentioned we'd talk a little bit about this. At Ephesus, now Paul is here. He has come in following the events of Apollos being there, and they cause an uproar in the city. If you were to read through, well, let's look at verse 9 of chapter 19, when Paul has arrived there in Ephesus, it says, "But when different or divers were hardened," individuals were hardened, "and believed not, but spake evil of that way." So there will be people lined up against this singular way of life that God would call the way of the Lord or the way of God. "Before the multitude, he departed from them and separated the disciples, disputing daily in the school of one Tyrannus." So Paul is here preaching and so forth, and he causes such a stirring up here that people kind of get out of hand in verse 23. "And the same time there arose no small stir about that way that Paul was teaching about." It was a way to live on a regular basis. Now, even among the Christians of that day, there was conflict about that way, which tells you that Satan, the devil, is always present in some way or another. When you read the first and second chapters of the book of Job, for instance, when there's this conversation with God about Job, with Satan and God are talking. And God asks Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And you know the story as it goes on there. Well, you know, the reason he worships you is because you bless him so and this and that. And so God sets up or gives permission for Satan to interfere in the life of Job in very tangible ways. could God allow Satan to engage in some subterfuge, some activity that would challenge the church? Why not? Doesn't he want to know if we really believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him? And what form would the challenge take? How would he go about it? Well, in this situation, don't have the time to read through this story, but just giving you a little hint. In verse 24, a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith, which made silver shrines for Diana. And this is some little idol, little icon. Brought no small gain unto the craftsman. Now, here is a religious activity that really has no relationship to God and his church at all, but it is a religious activity. And when we look around the world today, we see a lot of different kinds of religious activities, even among people who claim to be of the church or Christianity. Things are sold on television. You want a piece of the cross? We got it. Do you want a little holy water from the Jordan River? We've got it. There's something holy about the water in the Jordan. We've got some holy oil that we've prayed over that we can sell you. We've got it. And it is the devil's way to merchandise the religious superstitions of people. And that is what is going on here, where Demetrius is going to be upset with Paul for preaching against that way. But to contrast the devil's way with God's way has set up conflict. Whom in verse 25 he called together with the workmen of like occupation and said, "Sirs, we know that by this craft, by this merchandising, by this thing that we do, we know we have our wealth." This is how we get paid. This is how we earn our living. If I digress just for a moment to say the whole concern right now about the internet and how things are sold and without taxation and how accessible people are to different kinds of things, including music or the intellectual property of other people. That's what copyrights used to be for, to protect such people. I mean, Rebecca doesn't want her music on the internet where anybody can just copy it down. And so a judge on one day says, this is the amazing thing about how things are in our society, how Satan has it really wrapped up tight. On the one day, a judge says, you can't do this, shut down that site. The next day, they go to another judge who says, open it up until you got a trial. Well, what kind of judgment is that? And who's pulling the strings on that? But that's just a digression to illustrate that if this was about Satan in the world, we could find all kinds of examples to talk about. But we're less familiar or less observant about his activity within the church. So, here in this circumstance, they're getting upset. Moreover, in verse 26, you see and hear that not alone at Ephesus, but almost throughout all Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away much people, saying that they be no gods which are made with hands. Can you believe this upstart, this nincompoop, this destroyer of our way of life would come rolling through here and proclaim such a thing? People got upset. I mean, it got so hard and bothered. Let's find the verse for that. In verse 29, and the whole city was filled with confusion, and having caught Gaius and Aristarchus, men of Macedonia, Paul's companions in travel, they rushed with one accord into the theater. And when Paul would have entered in unto the people, the disciples suffered him not, or permitted him not to do so. And on goes this circumstance where Alexander in verse 33 has to stand up and talk to these people to calm them down. I don't know if you've been to any kind of convention, but I have to remember in 1961 there was a a Baptist convention. This was the National Baptist Convention, not Southern Baptist. This was the Black Baptist Convention. And it was 1961 in Kansas City, Missouri. A bunch of ministers gathered together to deal with the issue of who they wanted to be the president of their convention. Martin Luther King Jr. had backed another individual from New York, and the old guard, including his dad, who was supporting this other fellow who was the current president, they got to pushing and shoving. I mean, the two forces were pushing and shoving on the stage. Ministers of the gospel, preachers of righteousness, to where one minister from Detroit, A.G. Wright, knew about him, very wealthy guy and important there to the city of Detroit, was pushed off the stage, fell 10 feet down on the concrete, hit his head, and died at a church convention of Christians. Now, how did that happen? Now, some would argue, well, you know, Satan was there, of course. I mean, they're Sunday keepers. Well, that's a silly argument, because you can't have it both ways. Was Peter a Sunday keeper when Jesus turned to him and says, "Satan, get thee behind me," in Matthew the 16th chapter in verse 23? No. But Satan has this thing where he gets himself or insinuates himself in the midst of circumstances. In fact, we learn in Revelations 2 in verse 9 and 3 in verse 9 an interesting thing about Satan or the devil and his way. In the messages to the churches in these two chapters, the message to the church at Smyrna is, "I know your works," this is chapter 2 and verse 9, "and tribulation and poverty, but you are rich, and I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue," the church of Satan. Now, we know easily when we see somebody on, like LaVey, I forget the head of the church of Satan, Anton LaVey or something like that. That's Satan's church. But it's not so simple. Look at chapter 3 and verse 9. Church of Philadelphia, "I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door." I wrote down the wrong verse here. Let me check my notes. There is a verse here that talks of Satan's congregation again. If someone spots it, help me out. Is it verse 9 of chapter 3? Okay, let me read on. "Behold, there it is. I was reading verse 8. Verse 9, "Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie." Well, you could analyze that to the nth degree. Who say they are Jews? Who say they are believers? Who say they are followers of God? But lie and have this influence. Isn't that an idea that you must consider, that Satan, the devil, has a way that would say he has a congregation or a group of people who follow his way? Back in 2 Corinthians again, in chapter 11, this is later on after Paul had noted that Satan has a way. In 2 Corinthians 11, Paul issues this warning. And verse 4. He says, "For if he that comes preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if you receive another spirit, which you have not received, or another gospel, which you have not accepted, you might well bear with him." Well, why is he talking about this? Well, look at verse 14. After he's made all of this statement here, he says in verse 14, "And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers," those who do his bidding, also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works. And I look around the church in general, and the Church of God movement specifically, and I see some amazing things. What about you? Absolutely amazing, astounding things, that when I analyze the fruit born, do I analyze God's way or the devil's way? What about you? We all have opinions about that. There were those who would argue, well, it's a good thing to have all of these divergent groups of people. Why? More work can be done. We can reach more people. Now, I don't know about you, but a question that would come to my mind, as it was when I was a member of the Baptist Church, why can't all these Baptist churches be together? That was a question I had growing up. So if I'm around the Church of God movement and I ask the question, or somebody says, well, you know, more work can be done, a person coming into that environment should ask, why aren't they all unified and working toward a common goal rather than against each other? Why is that? How is it that such division exists? Satan has a congregation. He's a great counterfeiter with his ministry, and it's never more prominently displayed as when we see it in the examination of all of these separate groups and why they insist on remaining apart. I believe it's rather simple. If we look at 1 Corinthians 5, when the man caught in the act of sin was cast out of the church, Paul makes this observation in chapter 5, 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 5. That this individual should be delivered such a one unto Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that the spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus. Now, I analyze this to understand it this way. Obviously, there is something about flesh, something about the way of flesh that can be exploited by Satan. Look at Ephesians, the fourth chapter. Because in understanding that this man was to be delivered for the destruction of his flesh, the flesh was controlling him much too much, it seems. So in Ephesians, the fourth chapter, where Paul is addressing this again, in the context of contrasting the two ways, God's way and the devil's way, in chapter 4, and let's begin with verse 17. The walk of the believer is what he's talking about here as a new man. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you henceforth walk not as other nations or Gentiles walk in the vanity of their mind. One of the things that Satan will do is exploit our minds. Yes, he exploits it through entertainment. Yes, through sports. Yes, through all kinds of things in the business world and political world. But in the church, he will do that. Having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lasciviousness, lawlessness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. Why do people insist on remaining separate? Or to think of themselves as the only representative of God on the earth. Why would they do that? Is it because of greediness? Well, I don't know. Something to consider. But you have not so learned Christ, in verse 20. If so be that you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning the former conduct or conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Wherefore, putting away lying, speaking every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. You know, that would be interesting to kind of see people who truly claim to follow God's way stop lying. I suspect, I hope that it's not so, but when you get a bunch of human beings together with vested interests, there's a lot of lying that goes on. Is that God's way or Satan's way? So, what can I anticipate in the activities going on up in Tulsa this weekend? Oh, there are some people with right motivations and all of that there. And God permit that they prevail. But I just suspect from human nature being what it is, that there will be some people there for all the wrong reasons, who will be motivated by the flesh. And who is the great exploiter of flesh? Satan. Let's read on. Be you angry, verse 26, and sin not, and let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. You know, I suspect that if some of the Church of God International, some of us, were to show up at certain meetings and certain places with people, where people are there who were once formerly with us, or we were together in an effort, they wouldn't like it. They would be exploited by Satan, or they would give place to Satan because of what? Anger that has not been put to rest. It's a reality in the world in which we live. We must not be blind to the fact that Satan is working overtime with the people of God because he knows he has but a little time. And he wants to do everything in his power to derail as many as he can. It goes on to talk of the things of the flesh. Verse 28, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the things which is good, that he may have to give to him that needs. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it be minister, that it may minister grace unto the hearer. To be motivated by that, to contrast the two ways of life and to choose God's way versus the devil's way. The greatest work that Satan does is in the church. In James, the third chapter, he shares some things with us to consider. I figure that if Satan can cause David to do something against the will of God, or that Peter, where Jesus said at the time that he told him, look, Satan, get you behind me, and then he also told Peter, Satan has desired you to sift you like wheat, but I prayed for you that you be protected against such an attack. In such a place, in such an environment, we should be aware that he is active, that he is busy, that he is doing things in the church on a grand scale, and God forbid that he would ever come now into this congregation to disrupt it, but he was here once. Wasn't he? Because God is not divided, Jesus is not divided, yet people are here and people are there because the arch enemy wanted it so. It's worth considering. And he has not stopped working. Chapter 3 of James, verses 1 and 2. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation, for in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. And he goes on now to talk about the tongue and what it's able to do. And I suppose that little flesh is not even a pound. Just a little flesh can do so much damage. It can destroy such good work when left unbridled, uncontrolled. So dropping down to verse 11, after he has talked about this tongue and how bad it can be and how good it can be, verse 11 says, does a fountain send forth of the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh? Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation or good conduct his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. Why are there divisions? Why are there separations of people who claim the same things, essentially? Well, bitter envying and strife is the environment that Satan thrives in. His way can bloom and blossom and grow and produce evil fruit based on the presence of these things. Verse 15 says, This wisdom descends not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. So when people make pronouncements and stipulations and proclamations that, you know, we are the only ones. We have the market on the truth, the corner on the market of truth. God is only using us. It's not God's way. The longer I live, the more I'm discovering that God is very active in many ways in the earth and using many tools at his disposal. I mean, all I have to do is go back in history and see that there were prophets working in both the northern and the southern kingdom, but both the house of Israel and the house of Judah at the same times, who knew not each other. And we want to think that only one organization, not we, I mean, I'm just talking about Christians in general, who proclaim that we're the only ones and we're the only way, and that is the conviction of devilish thinking. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. It's easy to see envying and strife and confusion in the political parties. It's easy to see it there, on Wall Street and different places where confusion exists from time to time. In the courts, one judge says this, another judge says that, and they are judges who supposedly have wisdom. But there's confusion. We can see confusion in those places, but in the church, the devil's way is on display, because there, where there is envying and strife, there is confusion. There are people confused about every aspect of what we call doctrine along the way. There are people now who are saying that Jesus Christ was not Jesus Christ, who formerly were part of our tradition, who say and fight and squabble every year annually about Abib 14 and 15, you know, Passover controversy every year. That's going to come up. Because there's this confusion that is a result of envying and strife. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. You know, the biggest problem that existed in the first century church was partiality. The whole controversy about circumcision was about partiality. There were people of the circumcision who said, this is the only way. You got to be circumcised. You can't come in here if you're not circumcised. And so they were partial to themselves. And Paul fought that battle against that kind of mindset. He said, based on him being taught by Jesus Christ, that circumcision profits you nothing. Well, that made a lot of people mad. They followed Paul around. You know, they called themselves the circumcision. Where Paul went and preached, they came right behind his tracks and preached against it. That's why you have the letter to the Galatian church where Paul says, who's bewitched you? Oh, foolish Galatians, who would turn you back to those crazy ideas? It is because the devil has his way. What can you and I do about that? Well, there are a couple of verses to share with you. While we're here in James, let's look at chapter 4 and verse 7. One of the things that's interesting when you go through the book of Acts and you see people coming to conversion, they submit themselves to the way of life that is in contrast to the way they were living. And Satan does dominate the world. It is his world. He is the god of this world, so he has his people in place. Satan doesn't have to worry about various world leaders and world rulers, you know. He already got them in the bag. It's those people who are out there going to church, trying to figure out God's way and to submit themselves to God's way that I got to spend overtime working with, working on. So James here tells us in chapter 4 and verse 7, submit yourselves therefore to God. Clearly showing the contrasting ways. Resist the devil. He has a way. God has a way. If you resist the devil's way, he will flee from you. He's not going to waste a lot of time working with somebody who is submissive to God, who has determined that I'm going to do God's way, like an Apollos, like Aquila and Priscilla, like those people we read about in the Bible who had great battles. How Paul talked about the thorn in his flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me. And yet he never gave in to, he resisted it and felt that he was going to obtain the promises. Draw nigh to God and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. There is work to be done within our individual selves to make our collective, the church, stronger. In this congregation, and wherever this message might be heard among people who are wrestling with confusion, motivated many times by individuals who have nothing but ego, nothing but envying, and nothing but strife on their minds. Because Satan goes to church too. And he gets there on the backs of you and me. He rides in our cars. He stands by our side, or one of his henchmen. You know, the typical scene we've seen of battle between good and evil, you know, the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, and they're whispering back and forth. Yeah, ever have that thing going on in your mind? Sure you have. You may not visualize these images, but you know that there's a battle between good and evil going on many times on what response should I give? How should I react to that? I have been a victim myself many times. I don't want to say many times, but I've caught myself in a number of times having a reaction that was less than godly within my mind. It may not have come out of my mouth, but in my mind, anyhow, I may have thought, a Mack truck, that would be good for that person. You know? Yeah, a lightning bolt. That would be good. First Peter 5 and verse 8. So we are coming to a close here. And this is merely to consider some things. When we look around and see the confusion among peoples of God or people trying to get themselves together, know that the devil's way is on display. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8 says, be sober. Think with a strong anchor with yourselves. Be sober. Be vigilant. It means you've got to be on guard all the time because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about, seeking whom he may devour. Whom resist? There it is again. Peter agrees with James. Whom resist? Steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Yep, he is busy. He will come after you and try to get after you and take you away, but you have to resist him. The main thing to know, I think, in contrasting the two ways of life, I think are summed up in two proverbs. Proverbs 14 and verse 12. You can turn to either that one or chapter 16 and verse 25, where this collected wisdom is on display for us. Proverbs 14 and verse 12, or chapter 16 and verse 25. It says, "There is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." Now, as I look at the condition of the church, and I become more attuned, I guess, to watching television church presentations, whether Sabbath keeping or otherwise, and I see all of these people sometimes in the same town, you know, blocks apart, sometimes and when I'm visiting in other church locations or church areas, and I might kind of look and sample or on the radio or on television to see what ministries are out there, and sometimes they're on the same block, you know, with television ministries. I was just up in Detroit, and two of the largest churches in that city are matters. They're, in fact, they're battling out. They're duking it out on 7 Mile Road as to who can buy the most property, because they want to control 7 Mile Road and show which church is more blessed. Can you imagine such a thing? One's a Baptist church and one is a apostolic church or Pentecostal, if you want to use just a general category. So they are battling out, duking it out on 7 Mile Road as to who can acquire the most property. Not get most people saved and in the faith. And they do it with this banner of Christianity. Now, whose way is that? But if we get too comfortable and say, ain't it awful about them, look at the Church of God movement from the 1800s till now. Do you know the big battle of 1850 was about, what shall we call the church? Church of God or Adventist? That was the battle between the followers of William Miller, culminating in the battle with Ellen G. White, you know, on what we're going to name the church. That was the big battle of 1850. Now the big battle is, who's telling the truth the best? Instead of being concerned about winning people to Christ, who's telling the most truth? Who's got it all? Who's the best? Now, who had that attitude? Who wanted to be superior to even God? Who wanted to rise up to the heavens and knock God off of his throne and take over that place? Lucifer, who became Satan. And as a result of his being spurned away from that activity, he has been consumed and continues to this day to exploit human flesh with his way. I suggest that we must carefully analyze and consider what the motto of the church is. The motto, excellently chosen, I feel, because of what Paul writes to the Ephesian church in conclusion. My memory serves correct. I don't remember last week or know if last week we, July is the month when the Church of God International started. Am I correct in that? Yeah. So, it's important that we look at this in closing. Ephesians, the 6th chapter and verse 11. We have this statement. I think you're going to like the new opening on the program. Because part of it will be this, the page of the Bible with this phrase, this statement in there, where people can look at it and consider it. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might, verse 10, verse 11. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. He's busy. He's working overtime. If we put on these implements and solidify it with verse 18, prayer, we have no worries. We have no way to fail. We can do battle because our battle is not ours, but the Lord's. And we are in this spiritual battle, but we can be victorious because we know His way. We started out with the scripture that says we should not be ignorant of His devices. Consider this, that the devil's way cannot prevail when we are in God's care.